You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. A warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have you with us here. Post-Masters Championship 2017, Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall with you this week. We'll look at the Trophy Hassan II and the RBC Heritage very, very shortly. But first, as always on the podcast, and never has it been more pertinent, reflection on last week and Sergio Garcia, first major championship for the Spaniard after a prolonged duel with Justin Rose in the final round at Augusta National on Sunday evening. Dave, it was fantastic. It was brilliant. It always is thrilling, the back nine on Sunday at a Masters Championship, and this year was no exception.
Yeah, it's sometimes really nice, isn't it, when it actually just emerges and you get a true head-to-head and two separate themselves. We saw Stenson and Mickelson in the Open. So just when you get two guys playing at the top of the game, throwing punches at each other, and there's a classic setup. And I think at the start of that day, it was, well, what Spieth and Fowler going to do in behind? But they fell away, and it was the two Europeans going blow for blow. And yeah, it was a classic encounter.
It was. I found it thrilling throughout. And when Sergio Garcia had the incident in the pine straw on 13, it looked as if his opportunity to win his first major championship had disappeared. Managed to get out of that with a half, as it were, with Justin Rose, both of them making five in the end. Made a brilliant birdie on 14. And I was reading a piece prior to the championship that David Walsh wrote in the Times newspaper, and he made comment on how the 15th is often pivotal in a Masters, and it proved the case once again with Sergio Garcia's eagle.
Yeah, it smashed the drive. He hit some long drives, didn't he, in that last round? I don't know quite where they came from. He must have been pumped up. Yeah, that brilliant second, which seemed to clip the flag. I didn't realise at first, but it did just touch the flag, didn't it? And you thought, can he hold the eagle? So very well hitting the sort of glory shot. Can you hold the eagle putt? And it just tippled in, doesn't it? And then you start to think, oh, it's on here for him. I think on that 13th, I mean, that was, as you say, so that was pivotal, because it looked as if Rose could pull four clear there. You would have thought it would have been Rose birdie against Garcia bogey.
Yeah.
Gap was two at the time. And you thought Rose four clear. He's not giving that up. So when that happened, I honestly thought it was Garcia's from that point. I just thought that there was your momentum swinger.
And so it proved, and for him to do it on what would have been Seve Ballesteros' 60th birthday was well documented. And not only that, it was a moment of redemption for Garcia, because so often he's been the bridesmaid. It was fun if you were watching in the UK on Sky Sports to have Padraig Harrington in the studio, because Harrington, in his two most high-profile losses in major championships, Harrington had been the victor, and their relationship has been a little bit frosty.
Yes.
And Harrington, being Padraig Harrington, and I think it's tribute to the man he is, he wasn't just going to say, yes, I'm fantastical, please, for Sergio Garcia.
Yes.
He talked about their relationship and how fragile it was, and how the Ryder Cup really was the only time they came together as a partnership.
Yeah, it was good. He didn't just sort of trot out
banalities,
did he?
No, it wasn't all cliched, was it?
And people were sort of saying that, you know, everyone's heart must be for Sergio. And he said, well, not really. So, yeah, it was good. But then he kind of brought it round and talked well about him as well. So, yeah, it was that added a little element as well, didn't it, having Harrington there? Obviously, at what point do you want to take the mick out of me about Garcia?
I wasn't going to do it at all, Dave, because I listened to the podcast and you were quite dismissive about Garcia's chances on the podcast. But as you were saying to me off air, your opinion changed during the championship.
Yeah, one of the big things I was saying beforehand was it was the bogey count that was absolutely key. I said it about Dustin Johnson. In the US Open, he'd made least bogeys than anyone in the field. And people sometimes think, oh, the Masters, birdies, eagles, that's what wins it. No, it's the bogey count. So after three rounds, I totted up the bogey count of the top 20 on the leaderboard, and Garcia's was the lowest. He was plus five for his three rounds. And from that point, I thought, right, I've got to just switch horses here, because that's a key stat. Somebody said to me, I published them at the end, and somebody said, well, what's the point of listing them now? But the key to them was you can use them in running. So yeah. After 3 days, Garcia was plus five on for his bad holes, if you like, and that was the best in the field. And just that little thing as well, on the Saturday night, he holed a putt to get into the final group with Rose rather than with Spieth.
I thought that was a big factor, yeah. And I must admit.
I wrote a little thing on Twitter saying, I think it, because I'd been watching the Danny Willett documentaries, I was sort of piecing together a documentary in my head if Sergio won, and there'd be little things like holding that putt to get into the final group. There was the shot on 13 which stuck on the bank. Seve's putt. It was all little things. And I thought, this is going his way. So with the bogey count being the way it was, I kind of moved all my chips onto Sergio, away from Fowler, who I thought was going the wrong way and saving himself with the putter.
I must admit, I was on Ricky Fowler pre-tournament. I did a piece live in Las Vegas, yep, that I sent through, and my three were Dave Fowler and Daniel Berger. And on Saturday night, I was convinced he was going to go backwards on Sunday, because yep, there's only so often you can be saved by the flat stick in this game. If your long game and your wedge game isn't on point, and Fowler's wasn't, he didn't have his A game, didn't bring it. He did well still to be in contention after 54 holes. I wasn't surprised to see him slip down the leaderboard on Sunday.
Yeah, that was very much my thinking. It made sense, because I needed to free up some cash to sort of go to Garcia, and I sort of moved him away from Fowler, who, yeah, was disappointing, as was Spieth in that final round.
Just a quick note on Mike's bets last week as well. Landed his Westwood to finish in the top 20,
yeah,
as he so often does at Augusta. Fred Couples looked like being top senior throughout the week, but missed out by a shot in the end. Stricker, yeah, shot a 68 on Sunday.
That was harsh.
And Couples dropped a few shots late on. And he did speak very positively about Thomas Peters, who had an incredible Masters, yep, debut, finished as top debutant.
Yeah, you could see Peters really kicking on there in the future. Back to sort of the Garcia thing, I was kind of against him because I had to be, because I was trying to make a case for John Rahm.
Yes.
So I had to sort of dismiss
Sergio. And Rahm played well.
And Rahm did very well, and then he just lost his head a little bit, didn't he? Got a bit down on himself.
Maybe a couple more years.
Yeah, because maybe.
Augusta National does test a player,
yeah,
mentally and physically, obviously.
Because Thomas Peters is almost sort of laid back to the point of you can't get anything out of him when he's interviewed. He doesn't really sort of give you much. He's just sort of, you know, bowls along and saying nothing, thinking nothing too complicated. And maybe that's a good thing at Augusta, the temperament. But yeah, he was great.
I think he's an intelligent golfer, though, as well, Peters. I think that he
just doesn't give a lot.
Yeah, he just doesn't give a lot out. Yeah. I think he's cool, calm, composed. But I think under the surface, he's a player with enormous ability, and he's got belief as well in his own ability, Thomas Peters. He looks like he's already a star, isn't he? But he looks like a future major champion.
He's building some big a CV with some big events on it now, isn't it? And they all seem to be not on Bermuda grass. That's a little thing,
okay,
I picked up on.
That's worth looking at, yeah, in the future.
But just finally on Garcia, yeah, Mike was quite dismissive of me sort of having been down on Garcia. Mike was right there, because I did brush him aside too easily at the off, but then I did change.
I know we've talked about this probably long enough, listeners, now, but one final point on Sergio Garcia. It's off the golf course, isn't it, with Garcia?
Yeah.
I mean, him being settled in his personal life is the greatest harbinger to success on Sunday night.
Yeah, and even Paul McGinley said, even after he'd missed that little putt to win, Paul McGinley was in the Sky commentary box, picked up on the fact that his fiancée Angela just kind of stepped aside out of the ropes, gave him a high five and sort of said, like, go, don't feel bad, you can go and win.
That's
this.
A big moment.
Yeah.
Big moment. And then when Justin Rose went right on the playoff hole, Sergio Garcia stepped in, hit a booming drive,
yeah,
and it was all said and done after that.
And it was great that he won it with a putt. That, yes, you know, it's there, isn't it? It's on film. It's there. He's, and it even did a little dance, a little flamenco dance around the hole. So brilliant stuff.
Don't get too down now. We're moving from Augusta National and the Masters 2017 to the Trophy Hassan II in Morocco.
Yeah.
Can you re-energise yourself for this championship?
I had to write my Roto World preview for it, and boy, did I have to sort of pick myself off the floor to muster any enthusiasm for it. It's always hard, isn't it? And to sort of go to a fairly low-key event like that, it's like, oh.
Here we go. We're going to do it. We're going to do it.
We can do this. Come on.
Dean Burmester is the 14-1 favourite here with William Hill. Brandon Stone, Zhongyun Wang, and Yus Lauten, all 16-1. James Morrison and Jordan Smith, both 25s. Alexander Levy, Dylan Fritelli, Matteo Manassero, Stephen Gallagher, and Victor Dubuisson, all 33-1, and it's 40-1 and bigger the rest. Same course as last year, the red course at Royal Golf Dar es Salaam. It's a pretty long par 72, and that was exacerbated by the conditions on Sunday last year, which were particularly windy. It's a Robert Trent Jones Jr. designed the golf course. And even though it's the same course, different time of the year for the event, it was held in March. Then last year it was held in May. But this time it finds itself opposite the Heritage on the PGA Tour in early April. And Wang won last year. It was his first win on tour. And it sparked that brilliant run for the Korean as well. And it's worth noting that winning score last year was only 5 under par. So
yeah,
conditions were tough and scoring was difficult as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and how he won that was amazing. He held a long putt just to make the playoff. Then he held a 50-footer to stay in the playoff. And then I think he won it with a 20-footer to beat Elvira. So it was an amazing putting display. And I think when I looked through the stats, it was the putter that seemed to be key out of all of them this week.
Okay.
So I would be looking at those who are rolling it well with a flat stick.
I think with Wang, it's always going to be short game and putting with him, because he does seem to have an innate ability to get up and down when missing greens, Wang. So it'd be interesting to see how he goes this week. He's one of the favourites at 16-1. Do you have an official bet for the event?
I don't. I can just give you sort of broad generalisations. One being, and I know some people get really upset about this kind of thinking, but do you think the Spaniards might just have an extra kick in their step?
I didn't write this down, but it was something that I was thinking about, where the likes of Pablo Larrazabal,
in particular
Larrazabal,
if you read him on Twitter, he was absolutely
he was gushing, wasn't he, about Garcia.
Sergio, yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see how he plays at 40-1 this week. The one that I quite liked, I'm not having a bet in the event, I must admit, pre-tournament anyway, but Nacho Alvira, who finished
second last year.
Yeah, makes sense. He's a Spaniard. He copes well with bad conditions, and he's long off the tee as well, Alvira, which, when you're talking about a golf course that's 7,600 yards plus, is only ever going to be a positive. And he's 50-1 to win this week. Does have to put a couple of missed cuts behind him, Alvira, but he was one that stood out to me, I suppose, at 50s.
Yeah. Other Spaniards there. Carlos Pigam in there. Larrazabal, who we've mentioned.
Jorge Campillo.
Yeah, Campillo. Yeah, he was the other one. He's 40-1.
Yeah.
Another one who could be inspired by Sergio, but we'll have to see. I mean, you wouldn't just back them on that alone, but it just adds a few percent, maybe.
Yeah, I think away from the Spaniards, I quite like Jordan Smith of those towards the top of the betting at 25-1. I just think he looks extremely talented. Was the Challenge Tour winner last year, wasn't he? Won the Challenge Tour. And he's got a brilliant swing. I think it's a matter of when, not if, with Smith. But at the prices, I didn't think 25-1 was really giving anything away. Not enough to tempt me into having a bet on him anyway.
No. One other little angle, because it's in Morocco where they speak French, maybe the French players will just feel a little bit more at ease. So you've got Dubuisson, for example, Romain Langasque, Gregory Bordy, there's a few French players in the field. And of course, it being Morocco as well, North Africa, then it's not far to South Africa, and there's plenty of those in the field. But they're dominant in the betting, actually. Burmester, Brandon Stone, Dylan Fratelli. There's a lot of South Africans up there. I mean, Burmester, if he went in again, it wouldn't surprise me at all, because he hits it long and he puts well.
Yeah.
So that could be an easy winner. But yeah, I'm like you, I'm not having a bet.
Okay, let's move on to definitely the better of the two betting heats as far as we are concerned in the studio this week, and it's the RBC Heritage, in which Matt Kuchar is the 14-1 favourite. Brant Snedeker is 16-1. Brandon Grace is 20s. Russell Henley, 22-1. Adam Hadwin, Bill Haas, Charlie Hoffman, Kevin Kisner, Luke Donald, Martin Keimer, and Tyrell Hatton, all 25-1, and it's 33-1 and bigger the remainder. Sitting alongside the Atlantic Ocean in South Carolina, Hilton Head, once again the host course for the Heritage Tournament, and it's a real gem, Dave, a shot shaper's paradise, a course that requires brains, not brawn. It measures just over 7,000 yards, and it doesn't give the players the opportunity to wheel driver at will, unlike some of the other tracks on the PGA Tour circuit. You trawl through the list of the champions at this course, and it's a who's who of thinkers, players that are never going to overpower a golf course, or the majority of them, but those that can plot their way around with the best of them.
Yeah, I mean, we just look at some of the layout of the land. Some of the branches just kind of encroach onto the fairway, so you bend little shots around them. So, yeah, I think this is one of the real sort of horses for courses type of events. So I'll be looking at players who've done well there before.
I mentioned that list of winners. Jim Furyk and Boo Weekly are both two-time champions. Stuart Sink has also won twice at Harbortown. Recent champions include Matt Kuchar, Graham McDowell, Carl Peterson. And last year, Brandon Grace showcased an unbelievable wedge game to win. I don't know if you remember the championship last year, but every single wedge on that Sunday seemed to be inside 10 feet from Grace.
Yeah. And he is my number one pick.
Is he really?
Yes.
Okay. Brandon Grace, 20-1.
Yeah. I think sometimes with a defending champion, you might have to argue your case a little bit more because people will naturally think, oh, all the added pressures and all that kind of thing, all the distractions. But this is an event. I was looking through it. Boo Weekly won it back-to-back. Davis Love won it back-to-back. Davis Love actually won it five times. Mm. You've got other players who are up there every year. But specifically for defending, the two questions I ask, is it a tournament where people have had back-to-back wins? Well, yes. And what about the player himself? I've noticed before, Ricky Fowler doesn't defend very well. But Brandon Grace, he won in Qatar in 2015, went and defended it the following year. So that was his latest chance to defend the title, and he did it. So he's someone who can go back to somewhere and defend. I just think he's perfectly set up this week. I don't want someone who was in contention at the Masters. It's kind of, I think this applies to any major, someone who's been right under the gun in a major, I'm not that keen to back them the week after because it does take a lot out of you. But he had a lovely Masters warm-up. He just about got through the cut, and then on the weekend he was one of just 12 players to shoot two rounds under par. So I think he only shot two shots more than Garcia on the weekend, so he did play really nicely. And I don't think the Masters is his course, because
we mentioned that on the podcast before, haven't we?
Yeah. Whereas this course is absolutely up his street. As well as winning it last year, he was seventh on his only other appearance the year before. I think I read that he'd had a conversation with Ernie Els, who told him to come over and play this tournament because it would absolutely be up his street.
Right.
I think they had a chat at Fan Court Links, and they actually said it's quite a linksy feel to it. And Ernie Els said, this will be right up your street, or something like that. And so it proved.
We've gone a few weeks without an accent from you, Dave. I'm happy about that. Brandon Grace, 20-1. One other point that I failed to mention in the intro there, one of the course's main defences is the wind. But at the time of publishing this podcast, it looks to be pretty benign, so we might see scoring lower than we have done in the past. So that's something worth noting, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess so. But Grace should be fine.
I'm sure.
In any sort of weather. But he's a classy player. It's one of those ones, I think I was expecting about his price. I'm not put off by 20s at all.
I think the way he played at the Masters, I think if he'd bombed out the Masters a little bit more, you might have got a bigger price.
Yeah,
he might have got a bigger price, though, because everyone, or a lot of people in the golfing fraternity, know that Brandon Grace may be not ideally suited to Masters golf, but because he's had a decent enough finish last week, it shows his game's in good order, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think it counts for more. But and I actually preferred him to make the cut last week. Players who have missed the cut, I think they might have won four of the last five here, so it's far from a necessity to make the cut at the Masters. But for him, he was just struggling for form a little bit. So to get that good weekend at Augusta under his belt, I think that sets him up perfectly for this.
I'm actually going for someone who didn't play in the Masters as my headline selection here.
I wonder if I can guess.
Do you want to guess? It's a three-figure price, though.
I can't guess. No. Well, I've got a player, a three-figure price, but I'm going to play him in a side market. But first.
I'm going Aaron Baddeley.
Well, that's the player. Yes.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going with him to win the championship at 100-1, and I know it's always a risk backing Baddeley because he's there's no guarantee what you're going to get with his ball striking is the week to week really. But after a pretty barren run, even by Baddeley's, even in Baddeley's record, there's a lot to like about his last two starts. Finished tied for 41st in the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and then built on that to finish in a tie for 15th at the Shell Houston Open.
Fifth at halfway.
He was 8-under, wasn't he, first two rounds? Mm. Didn't drop a shot, actually, at Houston in the first couple of rounds. But on the back of that performance, where better to pop up for Baddeley than Harbortown? Because he won here in 2006, runner-up in 2008, and was ninth last year as well. What was encouraging about that performance in Houston was he ranked 14th in strokes gained tee to green for the week, which is pretty much unheard of for Baddeley, in all honesty. And if his short game is on song, which is obviously his primary asset, he could go very close this week on a course that plays to his strengths. And he's not the only Aussie that's played well at Harbortown down the years. There's been four different Australian winners of this championship.
Yeah, Peter Lonard won.
Yeah, he did.
Is this a quiz?
It's not a quiz. Peter Lonard's won.
Yeah.
Aaron Baddeley is obviously won.
Are we going a long way back now?
We're going a long way back, I think, for the other two.
Did Greg Norman ever win it?
Greg Norman's the third. Right. And then I think we've got to go back even before Norman for the fourth. I'll look that up in a second and give you the answer if you're wondering, listeners. But I think 100-1's fine on... I think it's a good price on Aaron Baddeley.
You see, I can't quite see him winning, so I looked at him in a side market for a top 10.
Right, okay.
And I believe he's 8-1 for a top 10. I think that's maybe more in his wheelhouse at the moment. I'll just check that.
He is 8-1 top 10.
Yeah, I mean, ninth last year. You said he had a first and a second. Between that, he was actually tied 10th.
Graham Marsh. That's going back a long way. 1977 was the other winner. Yeah.
When did Greg Norman win it?
Greg Norman, 88.
Right. Yeah, but as you say...
I don't think there's much in that, but we have had... I just thought it was an interesting note that there have been four Aussie winners of this championship.
Yeah, well, maybe the sort of wind factor.
Yeah, I think
something like that.
I think that's probably what it is.
And they probably used to play it with... Because no Aussie had won the Masters, had they, until Adam Scott. So they probably used to come here as a bit sort of relieved that the Masters were done and kick on again. But, yeah, it does attract some good winners. And I've read some Baddeley quotes down the years where he says he loves shaping his ball around the trees. And, you know, you don't have to just go out there and blast it. You can have more control. It's a bit more old school.
And I think what plays into Baddeley's hands as well is everyone is going to miss greens around Harbortown because they are so small.
Yeah.
No matter, you can be the best ball striker in the world, you're going to miss greens here. And he is one of the best scramblers.
Yeah.
Or has been historically in the game as well. So that clearly, with everyone missing greens, he's more likely to get up and down than most. So that plays into the hands of Baddeley.
Yeah. But you're going to go win.
I'm going to go each way, yeah.
Yeah.
So 100-1 each way. I'll play him a point each way with the six places on offer.
Yeah.
So getting the 20-1 a place.
Yeah, I'm just fine. Tempering it a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to go top 10.
Okay, good.
Because I think it's quite a good field and there's a number who could knock him out.
Have you got another pick then, or is that your second
pick? That was my second pick, yeah.
Oh, that's your second pick, Baddeley, top 10. Okay.
I suppose the other one I was near to at 66 in the outright was Wesley Bryan.
Yeah, I looked at him.
He's played a lot of good golf of late. He had a little run where he went fourth, seventh.
My only concern was that was his purple patch and he dropped off slightly, but then that's factored into the price as well.
It's factored into the price. Yeah, had it been on the back of that, he would have been 40s maybe or something horrendous, but you're getting 66. And he went to college in South Carolina, and I read a little piece about him and his brother, like favourite courses, and he used to play this a lot as a junior.
Right.
So even though it's his debut, he's played the course quite a lot and he's very familiar with it.
That's interesting.
It's Bermuda greens, and he did well in Florida. Well, he said, you know, I can't wait to get back on Bermuda. As he went into those events, he was fourth and seventh. So I think the planets are aligning for him. When he won three times on the web.com last year. One of those wins was in March, one in April, so maybe this is a good time of year for him.
I like that. I like that a lot. 66-1 he is, Wesley Bryan. My other pick, by the way, I've got a second pick here, is Matthew Fitzpatrick. 33-1 is my.
You read his Twitter page then?
Yeah, I have, and he's mentioned it before. I think he might have tweeted the same thing out last year, and
he retweeted himself.
Promptly missed the cut last year as well, but that was slightly different last year because he just finished seventh at Augusta, and I think he's in a different place now, obviously, isn't he? Because he's won the DP World Tour Championship, and he comes into this with a wealth of recent decent form in the States as well. Finished tied for 16th in Mexico, tied 13th in the Arnold Palmer, won a couple of his three games at the match play as well before losing out in the group playoff. But the focus is on his short game, isn't it, Fitzpatrick, which is terrific. And I think that he's putting brilliantly at the moment. He'll be bang up for this. He's ready to break through on the PGA Tour. And he actually started well at Augusta last week before shooting a 78 on Friday, which proved terminal in the end. But he bounced back with a 70 on Sunday. Should have him spot on for this week. And as you've mentioned, he says that this is his favourite week of the year.
It's a bit of some claim, that, isn't it?
It is some claim, isn't it, when he's just played at Augusta. Yeah. But this does look like a course. If you dreamt up a course for Fitzpatrick, it'd be similar to Harbour Town, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I just can't quite get over how it's his best week of the year.
Yeah, it seems
does
weird.
Does he do something else there? Is he what?
I've no idea. I've no idea. And he had his full.
Was he born there or something?
He had his full gang out there, didn't he, last week at.
I know it's a very popular spot because everyone sort of decompresses after the intenseness of Augusta. And it's very sort of cool and relaxed.
I think you can go surfing and sailing and that sort of thing, can't you?
Yeah, and then although the obvious difference, well, the many differences between here and Augusta is the jacket they win. It's dreadful, isn't it?
Tartan jacket.
Awful thing.
Tartan jacket.
It's a plaid or plaid they call it. It's just like,
it's horrible.
Dear me.
It's horrible. Oh, another thing worth noting as well, it's sponsored by RBC, and a lot of the golfers are sponsored by RBC, so they. It's worth having a look down the list. I've not got the list in front of me now of those golfers that must play here.
Yeah. Do you know any off the top of your head? Snedeker won?
Snedeker's won.
Yeah.
But he always plays here, and I think that's because of the link with RBC. But he has won at Harbour Town as well, so I wouldn't put a pencil line through him necessarily.
Yeah.
But there are probably a few that maybe. Just here because they...
Yeah, and they'd rather have the week off.
Yeah, and they'd rather have the week off after the Masters. So that's worth noting, I suppose. Any others you want to mention before we wrap it up then?
I thought Pat Perez could be a decent shout. He's got quite a lot of good course form. Another who had a good weekend at Augusta. Top 20 there, but a kind of no-pressure top 20. Just played well on the weekend. And he's played loads of good golf of late.
Mm.
He's fit. I think he had shoulder surgery season and a half ago. So he's played a lot of good golf, and I think people are slightly ignoring him. I think the only time he's really sort of got in the headlines was when he said about Tiger knows he can't win anymore, which in hindsight was fair enough.
He played well last week as well, didn't he?
But he's 40-1, another possibility.
I like a similar style of pick at a price to Wesley Bryan. Luke List would be mine at 66-1. I'm surprised to see him at such a big price. He just looks like a winner in waiting. He's playing great golf at the moment. Had a couple of spins around the course as well now, and finished 39th last season. So he was one that was on my mind. And Luke, we've got to mention Luke Donald, haven't we, at 25-1. I know 25-1 might seem a little bit short, but his record at this course, has anyone got a better record at a course without winning than Luke Donald has at this one? I think he's been runner-up four times and finished in the top three on three separate occasions as well. So it's just simply sensational. And he showed a little bit at Pebble Beach, the Genesis and the Honda as well. So it wouldn't surprise me if Luke Donald went well.
The other one at that price, at 25s, a bit more of a guess, is Martin Kaymer.
Yeah.
Because his record at Augusta was horrendous, and yet finally this year he had a good Masters.
Clicked, didn't it?
Yeah. So I just wonder where he'll...
Did he break 70 twice for the first, and it was the first time he'd ever broken 70 at Augusta this year?
And God knows how many attempts. He'd had more miscuts than made. So I just wonder whether he'll come here thinking, I finally maybe cracked the code there. He'll kind of do it.
He's euphoric going into this.
He's had as euphoric as Martin Kaymer can ever come across. But he's had two decent knocks here, so maybe another one who might go well just with that good vibe.
Just before we wrap then, a player you don't want to win, who came closest without being a pick for you?
Well, I do think Kuchar should go well. He's won here before. And when he did win here, it was off a top five at Augusta. So he's coming off a top four. Had that hole in one.
14-1.
Had that hole in one at Augusta. But it's kind of a... I know that is Kuchar's price for about the last 10 years in these sort of events. Yeah. But maybe this one could just...
I wouldn't lose any sleep if Kuchar won at 14s, I must admit.
Well, I would, because I think...
Would you?
I think he's quite obvious, but he's the one I don't want to win.
I'd have to be Luke List at 66-1 of those that I've not put in as the player that I don't want to win. Let's recap selections then. Nothing for the trophy Hassan II. Maybe we'll tweet something.
Yeah.
Possibly. Unlikely, but possible. Heritage, your selections.
Yeah, so Brandon Grace at 20-1. I'm going to go a point and a half each way. Yep. Brandon Grace, 20s. And then Aaron Baddeley for a top 10, 2 points for a top 10 at 8-1.
Very good. I'm going a point each way on both my selections. Aaron Baddeley being one of them at 100-1, and the other one, Matt Fitzpatrick, at 33-1. Thank you for your company, Mr. Tindall.
Thank you very much.
You tuned out there for a second, drifted off.
So I was thinking about the Morocco event.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Make sure you tell your friends. Download this podcast via iTunes. Get us on audioboom.com as well by typing in William Hill. You can subscribe to the podcast on there. And myself and Dave, hopefully alongside Mike Grennan, will be back next weekend. If you're having a bet on the golf, very best of luck.
What have Man City, Joe Root, Rory McIlroy, Andy Murray and Q-Card all got in common? They can all be combined with William Hill's new Acca Insurance, Acca 5. It means if you have a 5 selection accumulator and one lets you down, you'll get your money back as a free bet. And it's available across all sports. Acca 5, exclusive to William Hill. T's and C's apply.